Okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 148 of Shutters Inc. You probably weren't expecting this one because, yes, Shelton and Glyn are still in the States. However, I decided why let an opportunity go by. Dave Honnell said he would be more than happy to come back on the podcast at any time. So I dropped him an email last week and said, hey, how about it? And he said, love to. So, Dave Honnell, welcome back to Shutters Inc.
Thank you, Bruce. Great to be with you.
So how were those crazy pair of Aussies that you entertained during the week?
Well, they were crazy enough to get me to want to come down to Australia.
So excellent.
That's a good thing, yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Yep. And we may actually be down there in October.
Is that right?
Claudia's got a science fiction convention that she's appearing at in Melbourne.
Wow.
And then also in Auckland. So we'll probably be down in that area for a couple of weeks. So
fantastic.
So Shelton and Glenn and I were talking about possibly doing a little workshop or something.
Whoa. Okay. I'm definitely going to have to put that in my diary.
Yeah. So I hope it all works out. That'd be great.
Oh, man. That would be fantastic. Awesome. So how was PMA in Anaheim?
It was fun. You know, I like walking through and meeting people. I have a lot of friends now in the community. And,
sure.
And, you know, it's just nice to walk around and bump into people and have coffee and beer and stuff like that. So,
were there any sort of really, you know, revolutionary new products being displayed? Anything that really caught your eye?
I'm sort of specific, and I'm licking my chops over the D3S.
So, right. Okay.
You know, I sort of zoned in on that. And so I think I may be breaking down in the next month and getting one.
Is that right? What are you shooting with at the moment?
I have the D700. I've got two of those.
Yep.
And I love it because it's very lightweight and small. I can take the battery pack off of it and it becomes even smaller and lighter.
Sure.
And then my backup is a D90.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So, yeah, I travel pretty simply and light. And,
yep.
You know, I went to the D700 after shooting Canon for years.
So oh, is that I right?
Yeah, I was using, up until a little over a year ago, I was shooting with the 1DS, the first the 11 megapixel full frame, and which was great. I took some great pictures with it, used it the whole time I lived in the Middle East, and you know, the picture quality is just fantastic, but you know, the buffer speed on it was a little slow, and that was an issue, and high ISO wasn't the greatest on that. So
that,
you know,
it's funny you mentioned the buffering, because I recently upgraded from my what now feels really ancient Konica Minolta 7D, which is about five or 6 years old, to a Sony Alpha 850.
Uh-huh.
And of course that's 24 megapixels on a 35 mil frame, you know, and it's the first time I've ever actually gone out and bought a high speed memory card, and it feels like the transfer rate is the same as what I was getting on a slow card, but on a 6 megapixel camera beforehand. And I'm really glad that I went and spent the money for a high speed card, because I think if I was still using the old cards that I used to use, it would feel really tragically slow.
Yeah, I actually look back on, you know, I've had, what is it, the 600 Lexar, 600X now.
Right.
And it's just incredible, especially when, you know, downloading the pictures to your computer and, you know, ingesting.
Yeah, right.
And I remember when the 300X came out not too long ago, and it's just dramatic differences in speed of shooting. Not so much shooting, although the 600X will really fire through with the D3S.
I can imagine.
So you really get up into the, I don't know what it is, 10, 12 frames per second or something.
Wow.
But I mean, I would literally, I remember being frustrated with the 1DS, which at this point has got to be 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah, I'd think so, yeah.
I guess older than that. I sold mine and you know, that one I would maybe shoot 10 frames and it would lock up until the buffer. So, a little frustrating sometimes.
You wouldn't shoot that rapidly very often, though, I'd imagine.
Not often. I remember it happening a couple of times in the Middle East, and
yeah, right.
I would have to pick up my 40D or whatever it was I was carrying on the other side. The best camera for that job was the old the Mark IIs, somewhere in that area, the 8 megapixel.
Right.
But I only had the 1DS, so
oh, okay.
You know, it's kind of, you know, and then, you know, you look back. I was thinking back the other day about, I was talking to a friend of mine when the Nikon Coolpix 950 first came out.
Okay, so what era would that have been?
It was, let me think back here. This would have been, 95, is that correct?
Okay.
Or it was later than that? No. It was the late 90s, I think.
Okay.
Maybe 2000 even. But, you know, what I mentioned the other day was you'd push the finger, you know, the shutter down on it, and maybe about 10 seconds later it would shoot the pictures, you know, and it was 2 megapixel. And
go grab a coffee and then come back and get the shot.
Yeah. So, you know, it's that part of technology is fun. Although I tell people, you know, you don't really need a 12 megapixel camera. I would be quite happy with a 6 or 8 megapixel unless I wanted to shoot wide and crop.
Yeah.
Or if I was shooting in low light. But the megapixels don't bother me too much. I don't see myself buying a 24 megapixel or, you know, 32 megapixel or whatever they're coming out with. Now, it's nice, but the kind of work that I do out in the field, too, is a lot of times if I'm transmitting to a client, a news client, you know, I have to actually trim the file sizes down a little bit anyway.
So yeah, I can appreciate that.
I'm pretty happy with my D700 and my impending D3S.
Look, in all retrospect, I feel much the same. You know, I'd have been happy if the 850 had been a 12 megapixel on a 35mm frame rather than 24 megapixels. Because as you say, it's just insane amount of resolution.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of it now, I think, is the market is sort of settling. It's still, I consider, a new technology, and you know, a lot of it's marketing words to who has the megapixel, and you know, but I mean, you can take, I got Claudia D5000, which I think in the States is around $600 camera or something.
Nice.
And I got, maybe it's 700, and I bought sort of the cheap Nikon zoom with it as a kit, which was another $150, and that thing takes great pictures.
Yeah.
You can really take some nice stuff with that. I'm still looking back on my, the Canon 10D or D10 or whatever they called it back then, the 3 megapixel.
Yeah.
And I've got, in my studio, I've got a couple of pictures I shot with that, and they're just fantastic.
Yeah, right.
And in some ways, I miss all of that. Very, very archaic equipment, you know, for memory's sake.
Now, I want to ask you a technical question.
Do I have to promise I know the answer to this?
Well, I'm fairly confident that this is in your comfort zone, so I'll give
it a shot. I have no humility.
I've got to say, I've been absolutely loving playing with the gels that you sent us, and I know that the couple of winners that we had have been enjoying them as well.
But I enjoyed the poetry that was with that. I think, winning.
Oh, yes. It was great. I can't remember the specifics, but I do remember that it was good. So my question is this. Hypothetically speaking, let's say, you know, one of your clients rings you up and says, Dave, want you to go and shoot, you know, a shop front in a mall.
Right.
You get down there, you're going to be confronted with so many different color temperatures of artificial light.
Right.
How do you tackle that? How do you decide which light source you're going to try to match up to? And then how do you accomplish that? What's your approach?
Well, that's a great question. It's getting better and better for that too. What I'm finding is a lot of lights now are pretty close to daylight balanced, especially in the States here. I would guess it's the same in the rest of the world. In fact, I think the rest of the world is ahead of the U.S. on this. But with the daylight balanced fluorescent bulbs, I'm finding that there aren't a lot of green cast to fluorescence anymore.
Right.
Or it's very slight. So I guess what I would do, if it was a mall setting like that, and I had to shoot during mall hours, for instance, I couldn't shut all the lights down and start from scratch. I would just shoot. Yeah, I would probably just. What I would do is I would start at daylight, since if I'm using strobe, you know, or speed lights as many of us do now, that's daylight balanced. So I would start with it. Obviously, shoot raw, so you can change it up when you're processing it. but nine times out of 10, I can shoot daylight. And sometimes, you know, some of the stray lights that are in there, if they're warmer, if they're an incandescent bulb,
yep.
Sometimes that warm light is nice.
Right.
You know, I also carry larger gels with me too that I would use for a studio setup for larger lights.
Oh, okay.
Because then you could take a bluish gel, wants any incandescent lights too. You know, if you really wanted to get specific with it, having a swatch of 12 by 12 inch gels with you.
Wow.
Then I could take any incandescent light. Let's say if there are recessed incandescent lights in the ceiling,
yep.
I could tape up a bluish gel to it to balance it to daylight.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But I have to tell you, I like the natural colors that come out of lights. And if it was a storefront, once again, there's probably a lot of different colored lights coming out of there.
Yeah.
Maybe that your blind eye can't see, but you know, you're gonna have a mixture of warm light and cool light, and it just.
So you'd pretty much shoot it as is and let the cards fall where they do.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't, but then again, I would also take in extra speed lights and probably try to light up backgrounds with a speed light, and maybe put a slightly, you know, depending on the color palette, you know, add some more dramatic color into, like you see with our Hollywood kits, we've got some pinks and purple and, you know, colors like that. So then you could just sort of blast away any of the other lights that are out there.
Right.
Another thing too, is if there's an adjustable light, like a rheostat, on which I'm sure on most stores, and actually, you know, I know you're not limiting to just a mall storefront, but you know, a lot of lights in a retail situation like that'll have a dimmer switch on it.
Oh, okay.
So
yep.
You can play around with that too. Yeah. And now, every instance is different.
Yeah, for sure. Now, my other question, which is kind of related to that, is I was looking a couple of days ago at Joe McNally's portfolio and just, you know, just amazed at some of the stuff that he does. And I was wondering... Isn't he? He's just phenomenal.
He and David Hobby are playing in Dubai right now. I've been up on their blogs, you know, the last couple of days.
Right. I didn't realize David Hobby was over there as well. I knew Joe was. But.
Yeah, I think the last update I saw, they're playing in the sand somewhere.
Of course. Of course. Now, if you are shooting with flash... to fill in a subject and you're shooting, you know, I see this with Joe's work so often. He'll shoot directly into the sun, but he'll use, you know, copious amounts of artificial light to, you know, light up the front of the subject. If you wanted to shift the ambient light in one direction, either towards red or towards blue, is it simply a case of, you know, a red gel if you want to push the background to blue, or a blue gel if you want to push the background to red, or am I missing something there?
Well, a good example of that is that I have a picture on my site too, which I get was the simplest shoot I did, and it was north of Los Angeles a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And it was shot in the forest. Actually put up a link if you want to.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's a really easy shot. I shot it in the forest, which was shaded, although it was bright sunlight that day. So you can sort of see in the corner, you've got bright sunlight lighting up the sky.
Yep.
And then you can actually see part of the sunlight on the opposite side of the subject's face lighting his head also.
Okay.
But what I did is I set the white balance on the camera to tungsten. And what that did without adjusting anything is going to turn the entire picture blue.
Right.
So you've got a bluish cast over the whole picture. So what we had to do to light his face, and that was done with just one speed light with a grid on it.
Okay.
So then we have to adjust or compensate for the subject's face if we're going to light his face separately. So what we did on that was put a full CTO, which is color temperature orange. It's a very orangish.
Yes.
Gel made just for balancing tungsten light.
Right.
And tungsten being what I was talking about in the last question, which
yep.
is a regular light bulb.
Yep.
Which gives a real warm glow to it, even though you can't really see that if you're not thinking about it.
No.
So what we got was a balanced light on the subject's face, and everything else around him, including his he was sort of sitting cross-legged on a boulder.
Okay.
And since we used a gridded light on him, you're only getting the lit part of his face. So it's a very dramatic thing. So what you can do if you have a set of gels is just play around with that. You'd be thinking, you know, if you wanted a red backdrop, then you would sort of have to, it would be a little bit difficult to do a red backdrop with the picture that I just described.
Right.
Because we're lighting a huge amount of area with a blue light, but we're not actually lighting it. We're just playing with color temperature.
Right. So sometimes, you know, I've seen shots where it's a similar type of thing where you've got a foreground subject, but it might be at sunset. But let's say that the sunset is not particularly dramatic at the time that you're shooting.
Uh-huh.
How do you get that, you know, that more red, intense looking sunset, but then balance your foreground subject?
Well, the best thing to do, well, actually, you know, the lower you let that sun come down, and especially if you have clouds too, you're just going to get a much deeper color. Sometimes it's going to be bluish, and depending on the smog content or pollution out here, we get a lot of
pick the man who lives in LA.
Pick a real smoggy location and you get a lot of reds and colors like that. But really, sometimes I'll shoot a shot like that, and if there's not a cloud in the sky, it's a real tricky time as to when it's gonna kind of brighten up. You know, it's pretty easy to get a deep blue out of it by underexposing, which I'll usually do.
Yeah.
You know, one to two stops, underexpose the whole picture, and then balance, you know, with the fill flash. I mean, another thing you could do, which I don't do, but you certainly could, is start putting, you know, filters on your lens.
Okay.
You know, one thing that would be kind of fun to do, now that you bring it up, is maybe put a reddish, you know, photo filter screwed in on your lens.
Okay.
Not a gel like I'm talking about. But if you take a reddish filter, put it on the lens, and then balance the light any way that you want. See, I'm trying to think of what would balance out that. If it would be yellow, or you'd want to put a gel on the flash in order to get the color that you want on the subject. But
would you not go to blue to filter the red out of it?
I guess you would. Yeah. Yeah, that's something I couldn't promise to answer yet. I don't know my color chart here.
I'll have to do some more playing around and experiment.
Exactly. And I don't know how to add 2 + 2 either. But you get the point. If you you know, it's easy to take a room with no light in it and then make any color you want on the wall or surround subject. But when you're going outside, I think a good example is that picture that I showed. And you'll see Joe and David do this too, you know, using that tungsten white balance trick.
Yep.
But I think it actually would be fun to put a different colored filter on the camera.
Yeah, right.
Actual lens. And then, I mean, there's sometimes when you will make a person's face totally yellow or totally green or something and get sort of psychedelic on it. So, you know, you don't always have to adjust to a flesh tone.
Right.
You get kind of about it too.
So am I right in thinking, I think flash is about 5,500 Kelvin, is that right?
Yeah, 55, 56, I believe.
And daylight, like sunlight, would be around about 6,500, is that about right?
Yeah, I mean, I consider it to be pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get people too that say, well, from this flash to that flash, the color temperature is a little bit off. And,
right.
You know, I always just go by what it looks like on the back of the camera, and then I can sort of visualize what it's going to be like once I get it in the computer, and then do a print also.
Yeah, I guess that's one of those things that just comes down to experience. You know, the more you do it, the more you can predict what the results will be.
Yeah, and getting comfortable with your camera and your flash units.
Definitely.
I think I might have mentioned last time too that, you know, when I shoot stuff, I don't go in, you know, with my eyes closed, but I sort of have a feeling of how the lights are going to react to the subject based on where I'm shooting and how far away that should be from the subject and what temperature to use. It just takes practice, which, you know, I hope to do a lot more of.
Don't we all? Don't we all?
Yeah.
Oh, mate, well, thank you so much for giving us some more time. I'm glad to have you back.
Oh, I love it. And, tell Shelton I'm not trying to take his job. I was trying to actually get him down here today to the studio.
I know. That would have been awesome. That would have been funny.
they're out shooting a California model today, and I'm hoping to go to Torrance on Sunday. They're doing a workshop down there.
Right. So, she was a,
see not, if they have any
not a bad looking model they lined up.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't see a picture, but they were describing her.
Oh, yeah.
The party. Yeah. You know, I'll go down there on Sunday and see if they have any free donuts or anything.
Excellent. All right, Dave Honnell, well, thank you very much. And say hello to Claudia for us.
I sure will. And hopefully we'll see all you guys this fall.
Oh, mate, that would be so cool if we see you down under. That would be great.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for your time, mate. I really appreciate it.
Very cool, sir.
And no worries. Anytime. Okay, so that'll pretty much do it for this episode. Just a short one, but I was very happy to have another chat with Dave Honnell and pick his brains because I must admit, as much as I've enjoyed playing with the gels, I've still got so much to learn with that stuff. But I'm going to put the link up to the image that he was talking about. There's actually a series of four images, and I'll put the link to the first one because once that web page loads up, you can then click through to the second, third, and fourth images, and you can actually see not only the setup shot, but then the various interpretations of that image. So definitely check that out so you can understand what Dave was talking about. Okay, well, the fellas should be back from the States middle of next week, or this week as you're listening to this, and so hopefully we'll have lots to talk about in the next episode, because I'm sure Shelton is just going to have a head full of ideas after being at PMA, as well as doing the shoot with the model and all of the other fun stuff they've been up to, so I'm looking forward to hearing from him. Okay, people, please, if you've got any emails you want to send us, please do studio@audiotu.com. And until we speak with you next, take care.
This has been another audiotu.com podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com. Please send questions, comments, or feedback to studio@audiotu.com.